Well, whether you've been gardening for decades or you're just learning how to do it, you have come to the right place. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, we're happy to have one of our great extension educators with us. Erin LaFave is the horticulture educator for Eau Claire County and joins us from our WPR studios in Eau Claire. And Erin, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on again.
It's wonderful to have you back. And how's your gardening going?
Gardening is going great this year. I have lots of vegetables and flowers coming to fruition.
That's good news. I've got lots going on too. And the flower gardens look just absolutely fantastic right now. And my vegetables, tomatoes are, I don't know what to do with all my tomatoes, as a matter of fact. I have so many.
Up here in Eau Claire, our tomatoes are not even ripening. They're just sitting green for the longest time. So hopefully some more warm weather will help us out.
Well, I hope so as well. And I know you love talking about the vegetable gardens and the lasagna gardening and herb gardening and composting and organic gardening and all kinds of great things, and even pest problems in the vegetable garden. So those are some of the topics we can deal with as we visit with Erin. You can join in if you have a question. I hope you'll call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Normally I tell you to contact our Facebook page too, but we're having a little trouble with that right now. So email us at talk@wpr.org or phone in at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. We're heading into the latter part of the growing season right now. What are some of the good fall crops that we ought to be considering?
Right now we can be actually doing a little bit of planting. For instance, radishes and spinach, Swiss chard and kale, maybe even some beets too, is to get some more beet greens. And also garlic is one that we can start planting now so that we can have it for produce next year.
Oh, so garlic takes a year to...
Yes, it takes a year. Some people do plant it early in the spring, but it's really best done planted in the fall for next year's harvest.
So all of the things that we plant now, do they grow differently than the ones we plant earlier in the season?
Well, the ones we're planting now like to be planted when it's cooler out. So now that we're starting, we'll eventually start getting into some cooler temperatures gradually here, and they'll thrive in those temperatures, and some of them will even thrive when they get hit by a frost. So that's kind of why we put that second crop in at this point in the season.
Yeah. And, of course, we got all these crops chugging along right now. Are there ways to extend their growing season as long as possible?
Oh, yes. That's a really good point. Some of the floating row covers and maybe even some people have the hoop houses, and those things can actually extend the season for another 3 to 4 weeks, especially for cold crops like the broccolis and the cabbages, but even, you know, the spinaches and the carrots and things like that. And the season extenders can do about 2 to 8 degrees of protection, frost protection for those plants.
So that's a pretty that's significant.
Yeah, it's almost a month extra of extending the season out, and it also they'll help you start earlier in the season too. Some people have those cold frames and hoop houses and. Those can help people start plants even earlier to protect them from the early frosts, the spring frosts.
Jessica in Dodgeville has a question for you. Hi, Jessica. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a question about my garden. I've had this garden in the same spot for about 4 years, and I take pretty good care of the soil. And the garden's always produced really well. This year I started all my seedlings inside as I usually do, and they just did extraordinarily well. And I couldn't wait to plant them in the garden, which I ended up doing around early June because it was such a cool spring. And they did great until I would say about a month or 3 weeks ago. Things started to seem like they were dying or either dying or growing really, really quickly, but not producing the fruit. So I'm wondering if you have any suggestions about what might be going on.
Did you apply fertilizer around that time?
About 3 or 4 weeks after I planted, I did use some fish emulsion diluted in water.
That's pretty low nitrogen, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it doesn't sound like it was a big influx of nitrogen that would have caused growth, but no fruit.
Right. That was, so my tomato plants, I had 10 of them in a row, and the first one, they all looked incredibly healthy and were about 4 feet tall or so, and then the first one just looked beautiful, and then all of a sudden the next day it was all wilted. There weren't any brown or yellow spots. It was just wilted, like it needed water, and then it died. And then the next day, the next one, and then 3 days later, the next one. And the rest of the 7 seemed to be doing okay, but next to it, the broccoli, all of the bottom leaves turned yellowish-brown and are dropping away and not producing, small heads of broccoli, but not very much. And then the cucumbers, and one day they were just beautiful and fine, and the next day just very, very wilted. The sunflowers are growing. They're about 8 feet tall, but they're not even starting to show a sign of a flower. It's just got all the foliage. So I have several questions,
wow.
I guess. So, I did a soil test about 4 years ago, and everything was kind of like the ideal numbers. I haven't done it again. But one other thing to note is that our property is full of walnut trees. So I'm wondering if that might have an impact on it. The nearest walnut tree is about, I'd say the tree line, the drip line from our garden is maybe 50 feet away.
50 feet?
Yeah.
How big is that tree, though? Is it pretty decent size?
Yeah, it's pretty big. I mean, all of the walnut trees on our property are pretty big. I don't compost anything walnut. I did put compost on all of the plants when I planted them, and I did notice there were some walnuts in the compost. I think an animal is probably transporting it to my compost bins. I don't know if it could leach into the compost that quickly and cause that much harm.
Well, the roots will extend pretty far beyond the drip line, won't they, Erin?
Yeah, they can extend far. That was my first thought, too, when you were talking about wilted tomatoes, was do you have any walnut trees nearby? And so it's kind of hard to say how far those root systems have come towards your gardens, but a lot of people will note that they've had their garden fine for several years, and then all of a sudden they have these symptoms. And you have to remember the tree is growing. The root system is growing closer. So it's possible that something from the walnut tree is getting closer to the garden and affecting it that way. And I don't know about you, but I've had squirrels digging like crazy this year in my garden, so I don't know if they're maybe potentially moving things around into your garden too. I've never seen them dig so much in my garden before, and I don't know what they're doing, but they're creating a mess in my garden. So that's one option to think of. But it's interesting in your situation too. You're noticing some things are really growing fast. And
right.
My initial thought would be some sort of influx of nutrients, so maybe manure, or you have just applied some sort of fertilizer. But those are my kind of first thoughts. And then a soil test, we do recommend that about every 3 to 4 years, but it's not going to bring up any signs of walnut toxicity in there either.
Right.
Is there a way to test for that?
I've
never heard of it.
No, me neither. I don't think that there is. If somebody out there knows of a test, that I would love to hear about it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, me too, because I did call UW Extension Soil Department to speak with them about sending some samples of different parts to see if maybe there is something going on. But like you said, they don't test for walnuts. And the problem is I'm happy to move my garden, but I'd want to make sure that it's not just going to happen again if I put the effort into amending the soil in a new spot if it is the walnut.
Yeah.
So maybe raised beds then at that point, if that's what...
Raised beds with something on the bottom of the beds to keep the roots from coming up underneath. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Or straw bales.
I'm
doing that this year.
I would like to hear about that.
I'm doing that this year with, and I did it last year with great success. So
excellent. Well, so do a couple soil tests, and then if the nutrients are okay, we'll just chalk it up to the walnuts and try to move the garden, or do
I would certainly else. Try if you can move the garden. Wouldn't you say, Erin, try it at least, move it up further away from those trees,
right? Or like you said, start building up the soil so it's above you know, like a raised bed situation, a raised garden situation. But then, you know, really just kind of keep an eye on just are the leaves getting more into this in the compost pile or the soil, or, you know, are you having, I mean, just take a note of it too. Just maybe you'll notice something different if you really think about, oh, my walnut trees perhaps are just getting closer to my garden or things like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for your information.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll turn to Peggy in Greene County next. Hi, Peggy.
Yes, hi. Hi, I was wondering if you could give me some help on my tomatoes. My garden looks great this year. Everything is really producing. And I was all excited about my tomato plants. All of a sudden, the bottom leaf, my tomato plants, turned brown, like brittle brown. And then they just sort of drooped and fell over, and they're all just laying there. I have tomatoes. They're small. I think everything is just really distressed, but the bottom layers are just brown, and I don't know what happened.
Are those tomato plants pretty thick with leaves on the rest of it?
Yeah,
because, I mean, there's a couple things. There's two, you know, there's some early septoria leaf spot. So there's some blights that affect tomatoes every year. I mean, it's almost impossible to get away from it.
Yeah.
And the other option, too, is sometimes those upper leaves just shade out those bottom leaves, and then the plant recognizes that and just says, why continue to try to support these bottom leaves when the top ones are doing just fine for me? So you may just want to prune off those leaves that are browning and take them off because they're really not supporting the plant anymore.
Okay. And then I had one more question. Is this a myth or is it true? A friend of ours says that one way to keep brown spots off of your tomatoes is stick a Tums. When you plant a tomato plant, you put a Tums in for calcium, and that would keep the brown spots off. Is that true?
I have never heard Tums. I've heard people doing eggshells. And, you know, that's...
Well, there's calcium in Tums.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things where I say, hey, if it works for you, it works for you. But we have no research-based information on if that works. And
eggshells would be a good idea?
What's that?
Eggshells? Eggshells
would be a good idea.
They're not going to be an immediate help.
No. I was just saying there's things that people do that are kind of like folklore, things that they're – parents and grandparents have done for a long time. And with extension, we don't have a lot of research to back any of those claims up. So there's no harm in doing it, but I've never seen anything to substantiate those claims.
If you put it in and keep putting it in every year in the soil, you're going to get, there's probably going to be some calcium that's going to be available. But isn't it really a sort of watering issue that where we get the blossom end rot, Aaron?
Right. The blossom end rot is from fluctuations in temperature or moisture. So especially container plants of tomatoes get this problem because they're really drying out fast and then they get a lot of water. And also cool temperatures, I've seen it when we've had really drops in temperature at night and then really hot during the day.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. That's very helpful.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Talking today with Aaron LaFave, horticulture educator for Eau Claire County. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheryl Gasser, our on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, Patty Nagai will be with us. She's the horticulture educator for UW Extension in Racine County. Right now, though, we're talking with Aaron LaFave, her colleague in Eau Claire County, and really having a good time with her as we've been dealing primarily with vegetables today, which is great. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Marty in Douglas County has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning. Well, I have a question about an herb that's taking over northern Douglas County. I don't know, Aaron, if you have traveled Highway 53 between Solon Springs and Superior. A few years ago, you never saw valerian. You would see fireweed and black-eyed Susans and yarrow, and now pretty much that's all you see. It is... It's everywhere. It's all over the fields. It's marching down the side roads. It's making its way to our house. It's like the blob, you know? So I know there's nothing I can do about the acres and acres, unless there's an herb person listening who would like free valerian. I encourage you to come up here and do whatever you need to do to take it.
Is that the white flowered valerian or the purple?
It's white. About, I don't know, 3 or so feet tall. Kind of looks like, it looks like a big-headed yarrow. It's got the little tiny white flowers in a cluster. So, Aaron, I would like to know how to eradicate it when it starts working its way closer to me. Do you have any ideas about that?
Well, valerian, I'm assuming you know the difference between valerian and yarrow.
Oh, yes.
Or
it's not yarrow.
Wild carrot. Okay, great.
Yep.
Yeah, it is listed with the DNR as invasive, the white-flowered valerian. And so definitely, you know, mow it down or get rid of it before it flowers. You don't want it to go to seed and create a bigger seed bank in the area.
Okay.
And then there's probably some chemical recommendations that would work on it, and usually that would you'd want to spray that on either in later fall or early spring. It's probably not exactly the time to do that with a chemical. But, you know, a lot of these things, it's best done just pulling them so the root system doesn't continue.
Yeah.
To...
I've been pulling it up when I see it for no other reason than it makes me feel really good to be pulling it up. and leaving it to die in the road. So heads up, people in Douglas County, let's try and at least keep it at bay if we can.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. That's too bad. We have an email from Jeff who says, we've just harvested garlic and onions from our school garden at North Park Elementary School in Racine and have 2 raised beds sitting empty. Can I plant carrots, sugar snap, peas, and other pick-and-eat crops that would normally grow in spring to early summer? I find that being next to the lake gives us an extra couple of weeks of growing season.
Mm.
That's fun.
Yeah, carrots, you could plant now. The peas may, you know, they do like it cool, but they don't always get big enough at this time of the year. But like he said, he's got some extra time there. And like we had said before, spinach will do really well and radishes. Let's see, what else could you do? You know, the kale and the Swiss chard and the beet greens. But, you know, carrots, when you can get them really late in the fall, sometimes even if there's snow on the ground and you pull them, they're so sweet because they're taking all their carbohydrates down to the root. And carrots are delicious if you can get them ready for harvest for a fall planting. And he may even can continue to extend that season by putting some mulch on top of them as they're growing, because they'll get a little extra protection from that too. So I would give carrots, you could give a try at this point.
Absolutely. Let's turn to John in Prairie du Sac. Hi, John.
How and when do I establish a rhubarb patch?
Oh, rhubarb patch. You could plant that now, and also spring is a good time for that. The problem is getting your hands on some rootstock right now. It just depends on what is available and left out there after the season from everybody picking, but from purchasing it. But if you can find somebody who has a patch of it, it's best to do that in the spring. It's best to ask them to, you know, if you can take a clump from their existing rhubarb patch and then plant it in the spring. Fall is not particularly the best time to be transplanting or dividing rhubarb.
Yeah, we did that and had very good success digging some up from a friend, dug some up for us, and then in the spring we put it in and had great success.
Yeah, and I did that to some rhubarb in my yard this year, too. I divided it, and at first I thought I may have killed it because it really looked terrible when I moved it. But, you know, through the summer, it really perked up, and it grew really well, and actually just I was so surprised how much growth it put on. So if you do that kind of thing in the spring, don't be discouraged if it kind of looks a little sad for a while, because it probably is not extraordinarily happy to be moved. The other thing is rhubarb really likes high organic matter soils. So you may want to get a spot ready now And then in the spring, you'll have a site ready for a rhubarb patch.
Very good idea. John, good luck. Thank you for calling. Kim in Kiel, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is that I have always grown potatoes, and this year, for some reason, all of a sudden, I have these Colorado potato bugs, and they're in the larvae stage right now, and what I want to know is, how do I eradicate those?
Okay. Larvae stage, good that you're getting them early, because once they get in the adult stage, it's really hard to control them. So there is... Spinosad is a product that will really help with that, and that's the active ingredient. It's very, it doesn't harm the beneficial insects as much as something like a carbaryl or a seven would. That can work on Colorado potato beetle adults, but it's pretty harsh on all other insects around it. But the spinosad, one of the brand names is called Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, okay. And it's pretty effective.
Is that something that you can, where can you get something like that?
Garden stores. And
yeah,
maybe,
any of the garden centers would have it.
Even some hardware stores may have it too.
What is it called again?
Spinosad is the active ingredient, and it has many different brand names.
Well, one of them is, what did you say?
Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew.
Yeah, that one you see quite a bit in the stores.
Okay, I will look for that. The other, I have another question. I live in East Central Wisconsin, and I heard you talking earlier to the first caller, and she said that her things were growing fast, but our things here are growing very slow. Like you said, you have tomatoes that are on, but they're green, and that's pretty much the way it is here. And a lot of our other hotter, like my peppers, they're just starting to flower right now.
Yeah, I noticed that here in the Eau Claire areas, things seemed a little bit slower this year, and especially peppers, they're really not happy about the weather, I don't think, here.
No.
We've, we have harvested some in our youth garden, some green peppers, but other ones are just starting to flower. And, peas up here were really late. We were just starting to pick some peas.
I'm just starting to pick those now, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're a little bit slower here as well.
Hmm.
Okay. So it's not unusual. I mean, do you think that that we'll actually get to a point where we can harvest these things?
Gosh, I hope so. It's weather dependent.
It was late last year, too, if you remember.
Last year we had so much rain early on that you couldn't get out, and this year it seemed really cool for quite a long time.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And on to Glenn in La Crosse. Hi, Glenn.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My neighbor and I have the same problem. The last 2 years, we plant our snap peas and our green beans, and they never come up, and we search in the soil, and the seeds disappear. And there doesn't seem to be any disturbance on top of the soil, and then when we dig around in the soil, we don't find any grubs or other kinds of bugs that might be eating them. And I even built a little cage around them about 3 weeks ago. I tried it again and built a cage around it in case something was digging in the soil and eating them, and they just haven't come up, and the seeds just disappear.
Wow. Disappearing seeds, yeah.
That's weird.
You know, sometimes when I think of snap peas and green beans not germinating, you know, I think of maybe a soil quality issue. There's something going on there, or perhaps they're not getting enough moisture. But I do, like I said before, I have noticed the squirrels, they'll come in my yard and they'll move the soil around and disturb things that way. But you're saying you don't see any disturbance?
No little holes or, you know, where the soil's been disturbed. Like I said, I even built a cage around them a couple weeks ago, trying for the fifth time this year to plant snap peas. I finally got the green beans to come up, but snap peas I have not had any luck with at all.
I wonder about birds, but like you said, you had a cage.
Hmm.
Any ideas, Larry?
What would get the seeds?
Mm-hmm.
What underground?
How deep do you plant them?
Oh, about 1.5 to 2 inches.
Mm.
That's what it said on the package. Yeah. And, you know, my neighbor is right next door, and did the same thing has happened to him.
Well, that, and so the seed just gone, no seed.
Yeah, yeah, you can't find them at all.
Well, something's got to be eating it then.
Eating it, some of that's what I thought too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and squirrels, if they were coming in and disturbing, you can kind of tell something's been moving the soil away. So,
this is something underground. I
don't know.
Maybe somebody's got an idea. I sure don't.
Yeah, they're decomposing really fast, but I don't know why they would be doing that either. So, the other thought too is if your stream of water is a little too fast, maybe it's moving them around. But again, you'd still see them popping up, growing somewhere else.
Somewhere, yeah.
No. Mm. It's a mystery.
Well, the mystery continues.
Yeah. Maybe somebody else has got some ideas.
I'll let you know.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. Yeah, please do let us know. That's quite the mystery, Aaron.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
And you know, sometimes we say that's an interesting problem.
It's not fun.
It's not a fun problem.
No.
Kirsten and Boyd, your turn. Hi, Kirsten.
Hi, Larry. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
We have a black walnut problem in our tomato garden, and I started growing in straw bales, and it's wonderful. They're big and beautiful, and then all of a sudden, like the other lady said, one end started wilting and moving down the row. My only thought is that I'm using my rainwater from my rain barrel that is underneath a black walnut tree. Is that a possibility?
The rain barrel is under the black walnut tree, but is it
yes.
Is it covered?
No.
Mm. So, because the buds of the black walnut tree do contain that juglone, that toxicity of it. So perhaps there is some of that getting in there.
My only thought with that was, you know, we had so much rain up here this spring and even in the beginning of summer that I never needed to water anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden I started needing to water the straw bales and... Oh, and I had a pickle plant or a cucumber plant that did the same thing on almost the same exact day.
Oh, man.
And I know the cucumber plants are susceptible also to the black walnuts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they're drooping, they're getting the drooping, and then the straw bales are... How did you amend the straw bales this year? Did you bring in new ones?
Yes, I used new... this is my second year. This is new, and then I used Milorganite.
Okay.
So the tomato plants are huge and beautiful, and then one end just started to wilt, like it wasn't getting enough water, so I watered it some more, and then it just continued to wilt, and then the next one down started to wilt, so I just pulled those two out right away so it wouldn't continue down the row, and it seems to have stopped, but my only thought is the rainwater.
Yeah, there are some like wilt diseases that will make tomatoes do that too. So it's potential that they just had something going on, but maybe the rain barrel water idea is another option too.
I also put my grass clippings on as a a weed preventative, but they're in straw bales, so I didn't think that was going to affect it.
And did you use any pesticide on your lawn?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
Yeah. So did you just stop using the rain barrel water and try?
Yeah.
Just, okay. And that, that helped, you think?
The ones that have survived are beautiful. I do see now one on the opposite end is starting to wilt. So I don't know.
Well, one thing you can do, if you want to, the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic might be of some help.
Okay.
Just to identify if it's a disease issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the University of Wisconsin Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, what they like, though, is they like something, they like sort of a healthy part of the plant and a sick part of the plant. Aaron, is that right?
That's right. Yeah, they don't want a dead one, and they don't want a healthy one. They want one that looks like it's has some symptoms going on.
Okay.
And if you can mail that in, and it's best to mail that in on a Monday.
Okay.
So it doesn't sit, Monday or Tuesday. so they get a chance to look at it. So they don't want it sitting over the weekend.
Sure.
But okay, you can go online to the go online the University of Wisconsin Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Okay.
And they'll give you the information there and how to mail it and stuff.
Wonderful.
All right.
Do that. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. Dr. Death does a good job.
As yes, we like, he does. Yeah.
As we like to call him. He loves looking at those kinds of things. Fred in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Fred.
Well, hi, Larry. Okay. I've got a 35-year-old asparagus bed, and it's been producing really well. This year, however, I noticed that the asparaguses are not quite as vigorous as they used to be. They're not as big. I put horse manure on the top every year to, you know, because they're a big, heavy feeder. I was wondering, when I planted them 35 years ago, I dug down about 2.5 feet and put 6 to 8 inches worth of horse manure down on the bottom and then put dirt over it and planted them on top of that. So I'm wondering, would it do anything this year if in the fall, after things quit growing, I took a plow and dug a furrow along the edge of the asparagus bed, you know, as deep as I can go with the plow, and filled that with manure and then covered it up? Would that get more of the nutrients down to the roots of the asparagus and actually the rhubarb's in the same general area?
Hmm.
So you want to basically put a row next to it with the nutrients,
right,
a side dressing.
Yeah.
Typically you would think that would assist, eventually get some of that nutrients would get over there. You're going to disturb the roots a little bit, so you might notice some of that. But have you ever tried just like top dressing around the rhubarb?
I do that, you know, every other year, sometimes every year. So I threw it. I remember back when I was a kid, Dad and I had a chicken coop, and the way we kept weeds out of the asparagus bed was when we cleaned the chicken coop, we just put raw chicken manure on top of the asparagus. Didn't bother the asparagus, but sure as heck made the weeds unhappy. Burned them right off.
Burned them right off.
Yeah. So I was wondering about, you know, first I thought, well, dig a bunch of post holes, you know, 3-4 foot deep, and put it in there, and that's going to be an awful lot of work.
Yeah.
What about just kind of moving the asparagus bed? Because it's been there for a long time.
That's
a long time. Yeah.
I'd even think about, you know, that old. I mean, I'd think about some new asparagus varieties. There are some all-male varieties out there that are going to produce really well for you. You might really consider that. Go and take a look at the new male varieties that are out there.
Okay, so these are all male, so they don't flower.
Right. Right. You might be real happy with your new garden. Aaron, I don't know. I am talking. What do you think?
Well, it sounds like he needs a little bit of a renovation of the asparagus bed and you know, amendments with some more nutrients, and maybe some of those asparagus just might either be too close, you know, everything's getting kind of close together, or some of them are rotting out. And at the same time, you know, like you're saying, Larry, maybe add a new variety in there.
Yeah. Worth a look, Fred. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Sure enough. Thanks.
Appreciate the call. Now, we've gotten a couple of calls regarding the disappearing seed. You recall a caller a couple calls ago said she's losing the, or he or she, I forget now, they're losing their seed. It's just disappearing. One caller said mice could be taking the disappearing seed. This happened to her brother's garden, and he got it on video.
Oh, I suppose they would be able to get through that, well, that fencing.
And not make a big disturbance. You know, mice digging around wouldn't, you know, make a huge holes and caverns there.
Or maybe they're really smart and they cover it back up. I'm not sure.
Well, then somebody else said, is there, chipmunks, but they're a little big.
Yeah, they're a little big, and you still think you would notice something.
Is there, by the way, somebody else wondered, is there a deterrent for chipmunks in the garden? They're digging my potatoes and ruining the plants.
Hmm. Oh my gosh! If we had a good, if we had a good a cat, I'm not.
I don't know.
Because they're so small, just like mice and bunnies. They can get through chicken wires. You know, some mice can, and I've seen bunnies go through some really small wire fencing too. So for chipmunk deterrent, you might try live trapping them or trapping them to get them out of there. But I don't know of any other repellents that they dislike. No.
Live trapping or the other kind of trapping, dead trapping, with a rat traps, if you have, it's kind of hard to do sometimes if there's other animals around. But it's if you're at your wit's end, that could work. Jan in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about cauliflower. We have planted cauliflower in our garden, and some of the plants are forming. You can see the little white round cauliflower, you know, and the leaves surrounding it, and nicely formed. But some of them have little green stalks that are sticking out. And they've got, like, on the top of them, like, it looks like little popcorn on the top. I looked on the Internet, and briefly, I should say, and it said cauliflower is kind of persnickety, and it likes the cool weather. But, shoot, we've had cool weather, and, you know, they're still doing that, and I just wonder what could be the problem.
So the symptom is, can you describe the symptom again of what they have stalks, but there's not really a head? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. There's long stalks just shooting out of the, you know, the cauliflower plant. You can see the green leaves at the bottom, but there's long green stalks just sticking out at random. And then there's a, like a little white, like I want to call it, looks like popcorn on the top of the plant. And obviously it's no good. Yeah, of the stalk. So, and obviously, you know, it's not forming this nice, you know, white head.
Right, and cauliflower is very sensitive to different temperatures. It likes a certain kind, you know, a certain duration of temperature. So in the gardening world, we kind of talk about things that bolt, or I think with cauliflower we call it curding. Things will, for instance, people might even see their spinach doing this already too, where it gets the flower on it already, or it gets a big long stalk. And I think that's the similar thing what's happening to you with the cauliflower. It's just... the temperature variation, it didn't get the temperature variation that it needed. Did you plant it later, too, than normal?
Well, we had so much rain,
and
I'm going to say that we planted it, it was after Mother's Day, so, it was after Memorial Day, so I think it was like the first weekend in June, second weekend in June, something like that.
Yeah, I suspect it just has to do with its growing conditions. It didn't... Like you said, it's a little bit sensitive. It didn't get the temperature variation that it needed.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of odd because some of them are forming, and some of them are not. So that's what the odd, you know, that's odd about the whole thing. So I didn't know if it was soil related or, you know, maybe we needed to get our soil tested. But that's the odd situation. So.
Yeah, and I've seen that happen in a garden too, where, for instance, broccoli, one plant will do perfect and form a really nice head, and the next one won't do it. So,
So
not unusual.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Erin LaFave, our guest today, horticulture educator for Eau Claire County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking gardening today with our guest, Erin LaFave, horticulture educator with Extension for Eau Claire County. Great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening in. Call us at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And you can post on my Facebook page as well, at The Larry Mueller Show. Faith and Wapan will turn to you next. Thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I'm having a problem with my tomatoes. They're starting to ripen now, and there's something eating them. They take quite a piece out of them.
Yeah, that could be any number of things, couldn't it, Aaron?
Right. And are they, I'm assuming when you say they're eating, you're seeing a chunk out of the tomato, and it doesn't have to happen to be at the bottom of the tomato or the side or any particular spot?
Oh, no, it's not really. It's usually towards the top,
okay.
Or the side.
Okay. Yeah, it could be a number of things. Do you have a fenced-in yard or garden?
No.
Oh, then we got squirrels, rabbits.
No, don't have squirrels.
No squirrels, okay.
Do you live next to a wooded area or water?
Nope.
What else? Slugs?
That's what I'm wondering, if it could be slugs. But, I mean, it hasn't been that wet as of recent.
Yeah, I know. Are your plants mulched heavily?
Yes.
It could be living in the mulch.
Yeah, it could be living in the mulch.
Yeah.
So,
you could try a little beer out there in a pan and see if you can capture some, just to see if there's any there.
Little beer?
Yeah, in a pan. Dig, just a little, like a film can pan. And just fill it, put it sort of even, dig it down a little bit even with the soil, and then throw some beer in there. And slugs, like every Wisconsinite, love beer, or like most Wisconsinites. And that's a cheap way to check and see if there's any there.
Right, and a lot of critters, too, are at dawn or dusk, so they're out at times that we don't always see them, too. And with the beer idea, too, you don't want to fill it to the brim, because those slugs will come and they'll just slurp and then they'll move away. You want them to be able to have to kind of reach
Lean
down
over.
Yeah, and drown in the beers. The beer doesn't kill them, it just drowns them.
And you can put a plank out, too. That's another thing. You just put a piece of board out there and then leave it out, and then in the morning lift it up and see if there's any underneath it.
Okay.
Or just go out in the evening, too. I would say, if you go out in the evening with a flashlight, because they like to work after dark, don't they, Aaron?
Right, yeah. They don't like it hot, because then they fry out. The other thing, too, is you can still probably eat these tomatoes, just cut off the affected area if they're not chomping a whole, big section out of it. So they're still usable.
Yes, that's what I have been using them, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of annoying when you pick them and there's a big piece of
absolutely.
So, well, I'll try the beer maybe.
Give the beer a shot. Give the beer a shot.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Faith. I know it'll draw those slugs. Bob from Northern Illinois emailed and said, I have some shallots in the garden that have grown tall and have tiny bulbs on top that I know I can plant to grow more shallots. What do I do to help get the bulbs in the ground to mature? Should I stomp down the green growth to promote dying on the bulbs in the ground, or is there something else I need to do?
Well, I wish I could say I knew a lot about shallots, but I don't. So perchance you could contact the local extension office there, or just look up bulb or onion or shallots and then have extension behind that word when you search for it on the internet. But I have to say, I don't know much about growing shallots.
I don't either. So there you go. Mike in La Crosse. Hi. Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, I have a question. I have a small garden in the back of my garage that's getting increasingly shaded from my trees and my neighbor's trees. Is there any kind of garden vegetable plants that are shade tolerant?
Well, there's some that do actually like a little bit more shade, or even just the cooler kind of temperatures. So leaf lettuce, the lettuces like that. And, your spinaches, again, a lot of these kind of cold, hardy crops will do a little bit better in the shaded areas, too. So maybe even some of the Swiss chards or the kales. The radishes, too. But things that will not thrive in that is your tomatoes, your peppers. So there's things that will thrive and things that won't thrive. And you just may want to consider doing a little pruning of those trees, too, to just allow some of the the light to filter through the trees rather than, you don't have to cut them down necessarily, but maybe even just some pruning to allow some more light to come through.
And you were mentioning a lot of early season crops, and of course then you don't have the leaf cover on the trees, so you have less shade and probably more success for those things that mature early.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think my tomatoes and beans are probably two of them that don't handle shade really well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, that's too bad. You would be nice if tomatoes would work in the shade. I fortunately have a nice sunny location for my tomatoes and in my straw bales, and they are doing unbelievably good. Along with Limey, my lime tree, named Limey by my daughter Emily, and it is out. Limey is outside right now, and Limey has, I think, 9 or 10 limes going.
I love that you name your trees. And, you know, do you name your potato plants, too?
No, but I probably should. You know, Emily says, how's Limey? You know, let's look at Limey. And Limey's got lots of limes. That Limey is a lime machine, I can tell you that. We get a lot of limes all the time from that tree. It's been a lot of fun the last few years with that tree. It's outside now, and on our, we have a porch off our bedroom, and it's just... It's full sun, and it loves it. So there you go. Ron in Sauk City, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've got a really strange predicament. I've been in the same garden spot for, I think this is my 7th year, and it's one of the biggest elm trees in Sauk City is about maybe 50 feet from the edge of my garden. But the canopy actually even overspreads the garden. It's just massive. And it's full of squirrels. Squirrels outnumber residents in our neighborhood probably about 15 to 1. And when the leaves went off last year, there was 14 nests in that tree over the summer. But they're harassing my garden. For the first time, it's like they're playing with my peppers like toys. They take a bite out of it. Or just only twice they've actually dragged a pepper out on the fence and played with it in the yard. You find pieces of it all over the place.
Mm.
But they go up and it's just the peppers are harassing, but they go up and take a bite out of them.
Yeah.
There's tracks on the ground. It's just crazy. And in all those years, and this is probably my least peppers I've ever grown, and they're harassing them this year. And I just wondered if you'd ever heard of that.
There's probably one squirrel out there that's doing it, or maybe two. It's a new one that's just joined the neighborhood.
I'm guessing you're right.
Yeah, I mean, animals do strange things. They suddenly, put all their attention on one thing, and who knows why that is. You may want to try to put some sort of like netting or some really fine mesh cage over them if you can to keep them from going on them. And, like I said earlier, I just have been noticing weird squirrel behavior in my yard, too. They just are digging all over in the ground, and they're not eating my produce yet, but hopefully they'll stay off of it.
I had them.
Thanks to the program.
Yeah, I had them getting into my bird seed for some stupid reason, and I put a bunch of hot sauce on the bird seed, which the birds don't mind, but the squirrel did not like at all. And it was a great joy to see that squirrel not happy about chewing on hot pepper sauce seeds.
That sounds like a good trick.
It wasn't happy, and I'll tell you what, that squirrel did not come back to the seeds.
Maybe next year you can just plant hot peppers.
There you go. Thanks, Rod. Good luck. Appreciate your call. And Liz in Viroqua. Hi, Liz. Thanks for calling.
Speaking of rodents, the product you want to get, and it's organic and non-toxic, to repel all these different ones is called... Bonide makes it, and it's called Repels All, and it does work against chipmunks, squirrels. The only animals that seem to maybe not work too well on is they claim it works on raccoons, and sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't.
So what does it smell like?
Well, the active ingredients are dried blood and whole egg, putrid egg solids and garlic oil. So it's harmless. It's not toxic, but they just don't like the way it smells. And once you get it dry, it lasts for 2 months.
And it's obviously not something you put directly into something you want to eat.
No, you wouldn't put it on something you want to eat, but you can spray it on the ground all around. It causes an irritation to the animal's nasal passages.
How about humans? Does it, after it dries, does it cause
irritation? No, you can't smell it. No.
Oh, good.
I spray it around and I think, oh, that's horrible. And then when it dries, it lasts for a couple of months and won't wash off in the rain, and you can't smell it anymore. I spray it around my car to keep the mice out of my engine.
Ah, and out of your engine, and then your engine gets warm and...
No, I don't spray the engine. I spray the ground around the car and the wheels.
Oh, okay.
I'd rather do that than have naphthalene mothballs in the car.
Yeah, well, I had this vision of Liz out there, you with your sprayer spraying on your motor, and that would be that would not be a good thing at all.
No, but it does repel them, because if I don't do it, they do curious things to my car.
Well, all right, so that product is called Repels All. And Aaron, isn't it, you know, I kind of, every time on a garden talk show, I find that I learn something new pretty much every single time.
I do too at work every day. You know, there's always something. And there's refreshers, because you kind of forget some of those details about growing certain things. And
yep, you're absolutely right. Aaron LaFave, our guest horticulture educator for Eau Claire County with University Extension, for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and this edition of Garden Talk, we are visiting with Aaron LaFave, horticulture educator for Eau Claire County. Always great to have her come by. And certainly if you have a question for her about your garden, I hope you'll join us. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Aaron, are you going to be at State Fair this year?
I won't be going there this year.
I wanted to mention State Fair because Melinda Myers is going to be presenting every day at State Fair. Of course, the garden expert extraordinaire. She's been a regular guest on this show for a long time. And she is going to be performing or presenting, I should say, at her Bountiful Gardens program at 10 o'clock and 1:30 every day at the We Energies Park. And she's going to be doing a lot of gardening demonstrations. And I've seen her do it, and she does a really nice job. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to her. And again, she's on at 10 a.m. and again at 1:30 every day at the We Energies Energy Park. She's given some good help there for those of us who like to garden. And Andy in Oshkosh has a question. So let's go to Andy. Thank you for calling, Andy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My question is, I have several old rhubarb plants and one new one, and one of my garden books says don't pick any rhubarb off the new plant for the first year, and cautioned on how much I should take off of the old plants at one time. And my question to you would be, the night before we have our first hard frost in Oshkosh, which I don't know is end of September, October-ish type thing, and I'm going to lose them anyhow, can I go out and pick all of the stalks the night before the hard frost without hurting the plants?
To consume? For eating, huh?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
I don't know if I do that. Aaron, what about it?
Well, just the timing of that. I don't know how you would know to do that. But, you know, one of the ideas is that you keep all that on there so it's producing energy for to get through the winter. And so it's all the photosynthesis that it's doing in the leaves and everything, it's still making sugars to bring it down into the root system so that it can survive through the winter. So that's kind of the idea of why you don't want to pick it for the first year. And some crops like asparagus, they even say 2 years. And it basically you're getting a good energy reserve built up in that plant's root system. So and by the end of the season, you know, if they're still looking good, sometimes rhubarb is kind of chugging along by then at the end of the season, because when it gets cool like that, they even say the toxicity from the leaves, because the rhubarb leaves are toxic, that they say some of that toxicity goes down into the petiole or the stem.
That's why I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. So there's some, you know, there may be some potential there. And what that toxicity does is, you know, it could make you have an upset stomach, or even further be of damage to anybody, especially if they have liver issues.
So I wouldn't, especially that late. That's late for rhubarb.
Okay. So it would, you'd be better off just to leave it freeze and then throw it away when it's frozen.
Yep.
Right?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Wait till next year.
Yep.
Well, you just beat me out of a couple of pies, but I appreciate your advice. Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate that call. And I'm a little nervous about the toxicity. Gary in Appleton, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. My question is on horseradish.
Okay.
What time of the year should a person plant it, and where can a person purchase horseradish root? I take it you plant the roots, right?
Yeah.
Right. I've never seen it for sale in our area. It might be something.
Tell you, once you get it, it goes everywhere. So you want to, if you're going to plant it, I would plant it in something that where you have a containment system around it.
Right. And how deep should the containment system be?
Well,
yeah, that's
like,
yeah. I don't know a whole lot about horseradish. I we have the Silver Springs here. They have huge horseradish fields here, and I do know that it's a heavy feeder, and I would assume that it's either a spring or a fall planting.
It does. It'll take over a garden if you're not careful, mm-hmm. too. So you really need to watch it. I had that little experience myself, and I
like mint.
Yeah, sort of.
You can't kill it.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think where I got my garlic. I think I was able to get some from like Jung's, but maybe from a source like that, which would be then either probably spring.
Yeah.
No, or if you can borrow it, or if you can get some from, there's probably neighbors who'd be more than happy to get rid of some of their horseradish.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to put an ad out here in the valley.
Just put something out. Somebody will have it.
Is daikon radish different?
Is what?
Is daikon radish different than horseradish?
Yes.
In the same family?
Yeah.
The daikon one, you definitely start in the spring, and you harvest it in the same season. Now with horseradish, it's perennial, it'll continue.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. I love horseradish, but I got to really hate the plants in my garden. I can tell you that. That was one of the when I moved from that place, I had no regrets about leaving the horseradish. I can tell you that.
I was going to ask you how you got rid of it, but you
just
left it.
I moved. The horseradish stayed and I went. Oh, and then Betty Lou was on Facebook and had something for us. She said, I have no answer for the gentleman losing his pea seeds, but a solution might be to start indoors using paper pots. Peas don't like to be transplanted, so paper pots are nice because you can put them right in the ground and they decompose.
That's a great idea.
Hadn't thought of that. That's a mm-hmm. good idea. I like that. And then Julie on Facebook added, I had the same problem with the seeds for the past couple of years with peas and beets. This year I used bird netting and that was quite successful, as we are now enjoying a bumper crop of snap peas and beets and greens. So birds could get in there and sort of dig those seeds out. And let's see, we had a comment from a listener who said about Epsom salts to add calcium to tomatoes. But that is something that we can't really recommend in extension because it's not labeled for use that way, I don't think. Is it, Aaron?
Right. And the buildup in the soil for if you use it multiple years. And we don't have any information on how to do that, because there's no, what is the rate that you would use, and you're right, it's not labeled for use in home gardens.
And Christy on Facebook says to the fellow with pimper eating squirrels, try putting pantyhose feet on your peppers. They stretch and allow light and air through, but critters don't seem to want to chew through them. We do this for tomatoes. Oh, my goodness. Well, you'd have to have a lot of pantyhose. If you're going to, you know, boy, I've got a few hundred tomatoes on my plant. Fortunately, nothing is eating my tomatoes up, but...
I suppose you could use that mesh material that, like, apples come in, too. That might be something that you could put around them, too.
Sure, why not? That's not a bad idea. Well, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in here with more questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Here's a question from David in Madison. Emailed us. He said, I tried straw bale gardening for the first time this year, but they didn't warm up in time to plant all the seedlings. So he got a little late start with his watering. You need to water for like 10 days. You water those bales. I had waiting. So he said, can I plant those same bales next spring? Or will they be too broken down by then? And if he watered them and they've started to break down, my guess is you're not going to be able to use them next year.
Right. If you're just doing the straw bale gardening, then you probably wanted to start out with a fresh one. But that kind of a broken down composting, essentially, straw bale. It could be used as they use it in lasagna gardening, or, you know, they still, the material
absolutely.
Is still usable.
Oh,
it's,
absolutely.
It's a great amendment. But if you're doing strict straw bale gardening, I'm starting out with a fresh one is probably the way you want to go.
Actually, you know what I did? I took the last year's bale and kind of, that was, had just pretty much disintegrated, but there was still straw left, and just laid it down and then put the new straw bales right on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I've got the start of a sort of a lasagna garden maybe, huh? Down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Karen in Jefferson, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Larry, and hello. And I've got a solution for the people that are having trouble having their peas disappear.
Yeah.
Those are birds, and if they look, they'll have a hole. You don't see any tracks, but you see a hole, and you follow the hole, and there's no pea seed there. And you can see it in, you know, if you plant it in 1 or 2 inch intervals. And this happens with no matter what kind of pea you plant, whether it's the shelling pea, the sugar snap pea, or the oriental pea pods. And what you have to do is cover it with chicken wire, put a brick on each end of the row, so that that will keep the birds out, because they don't want to, you know, negotiate that with the chicken wire. So they'll leave it alone. And then once the pea plants grow, they no longer want them. And so you can very, very carefully take, you know, remove the chicken wire.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. And then, you know, later on, you know, if you planted climbing kind, then you can put your netting between the two rows. We do two rows at a time and put the netting in the middle.
Oh, that's a nice way to do it. Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd even say maybe you could just leave that chicken wire down, too, if you wanted to, because it wouldn't harm the plants, but
As you weed, though, we tried that already. You know, as you try to weed, though, you will end up with some collateral damage later on.
Understood. Yeah. Thank you.
You're very, very welcome, and I just love the show.
Oh, Karen, thanks so much. We love doing the show, as a matter of fact. Molly in Boulder Junction, hello to you.
Hello. Yeah, I love your show.
Thank you.
I know you hear that a lot. You should. I just want to tell you, in little old Boulder Junction, I mean, we've got 500 people in the winter, but we've got a greenhouse up here. They have everything. And I don't work there. I don't own the place. They've got horseradish plants, they've got garlic, and they tell you how to take it home and grow it. We've gotten to the point now where people up here on vacation, they go to the greenhouse and buy their plants and go back with them because they're so knowledgeable. So anyway, I'm growing horseradish. I don't know what's going to happen, but my plant is gorgeous, and so is my rhubarb. The other thing I was going to tell you real quick, the people with little rodents in their garden, I've used mink oil, but it has to be like real mink oil or have a mink oil base. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, the farmers' women that had their gardens, they would use the mink boards, like from mink stretching or mink stretching the furs. And then the oil would soak into the boards, and sometimes they would even make part of their fence out of the mink boards. And all small animals are afraid of mink. For their size, they are vicious. So I just thought that might help somebody out there.
Thank you, Molly. I like that, and I'll have to stop. Well, next time I'm in Boulder Junction, I'm going to have to look that place up.
Yeah, it's Winkler's if you want to know, but I didn't want to advertise it, except for Boulder Junction only has one greenhouse. So, but you won't be sorry. I mean, I go there when I need a break. Well, anyway, I thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot for calling, Molly. Appreciate it. Aaron LaFave, our guest today. Aaron is a horticulture extension educator for Eau Claire County. John in Eau Claire, by the way, with a question. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, I've tried to grow radishes now for several years, and I get beautiful tops, but no bulb underneath. And somebody told me to add potassium, or potash, which I did, and so I've added that, but still I'll plant a row of radishes and only get maybe one or two usable radishes, and all the rest are just tops and nothing underneath.
Well, here's a pretty simple question, and you probably already do this, but when you plant them, do you thin them out so that they're not so crowded together?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And then the other thing is, if you get a soil test, it'll tell you your nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus levels. And that way, if you need one of those three, the soil report will give you a recommendation of actually how much of something to add. So that way you're just not doing like a guessing game of, you know, here I'm going to add some potash and hopefully I'll know what to add. So that might be something you want to consider.
I've done that.
Okay.
And
you have the soil?
Yeah.
Okay. When did you have the soil test?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. Okay.
And, you know, it's basically the soil test came back with, I should have sufficient nutrients in all categories there, so it didn't really recommend that I add anything.
And when do you usually plant the radishes?
Early spring, as soon as I can get in the garden.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Those are my only thoughts on why you're not getting the radishes at this.
I can't think of anything else either.
Yeah.
I'm scratching my head here.
Yeah, they come up, they sprout, they look good, they get nice plants, and they grow up, and then you know, eventually they bolt with a flower stalk, and the whole thing, I can plant 15 feet of radishes, and I'll get two bulbs.
Oh. I have no idea. I'm not sure what's going on there, John. Somebody else may yet be able to phone in and with some ideas, but Aaron and I are sort of out of ideas other than what Aaron had to say there. So thank you for calling, and we'll turn to Cliff and Gaze Mills. Hi, Cliff.
Hi, Larry. I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
And now I got a question. How do I get rid of our comfrey? It started out with a little spot in the corner of my garden a few years ago, and I thought I'd kill it and plow it and disc that garden, and all it did started coming up later, and now it's even spreading out into the field next to my garden.
Yeah, by tilling it, you may have created more by cutting up the roots. So it's just it's probably just a matter of pulling. Keep pulling and just exhaust that root system from going. And again, don't let it flower.
Don't let it flower for sure.
Mm-hmm. I see. So in other words, I should take a a weekly stroll around and pull out everything I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no quick answer to that one.
I wondered if it would kill out like you mentioned that rhubarb would. If you pull it out in the late fall, then your roots will not get any nourishment to come up next year.
Right. You can essentially make them weaker and weaker. If you pull off the leaves, then they can't continue to make the energy to put down to the root, and that can weaken them over time. But again, it takes time, a couple years at least.
It's going to take a diligent effort, I see, to just pull it every time I see one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. There you go. Good luck, Cliff. Thank you so much for calling.
Hey, Larry, I had a quick thought about those radishes.
Yeah.
If there's too much nitrogen, excessive nitrogen fertilizer, that will make more green growth at the top with not getting anything for root formation.
We should have thought of that right away. That's a very, very good point. And Anita in Illinois, Lindenhurst, had something too. Hi, Anita.
Hi, about those radishes. You know, there's one more thought, something I learned about a couple years ago when I got beautiful strawberry plants, but for the first year, it wasn't their first year. It was the first year I didn't get actual strawberries. But the pepper plants, which were next to them, were bountiful. And that's when I sought some help, and I found out about companion gardening and that those two can't be next to each other because you won't get berries. And so I wondered what he's planting right next to the radishes. Maybe there's a problem in the neighborhood.
Another thing to look into, Aaron.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very good point. Thank you very much for calling.
And he was in Eau Claire, so he can give me a call, too, and we'll
keep
working at it. Yeah.
And you have tomorrow, the Eau Claire Area Master Gardeners Association has got a plant sale.
Yes, we do. We have a plant sale at the Eau Claire County Exposition Center, and it starts from 9 and goes until 2.
And what are you selling?
We sell all perennial plants, a lot of native plants this year, too. And it's all donation-based, so every year it's a little bit different, but we usually always have some sort of supplies to pots and yard ornaments and books, too. And then we also always have hostas and daylilies, too.
So that's tomorrow from what's the time again and the location?
9 a.m. till 2 p.m. at the Eau Claire County Exposition Center. It's off of Highway 93 South, and we're in Barn A.
And in September, you've got the Chippewa Valley Sustainable Future Festival on September 13th.
Yes, we do. And that is very close to our downtown farmers market by the Phoenix Park. We're actually going to be in the Forest Street Community Garden area. That whole area was actually where we're holding the festival. We have about 10 different presenters on various topics from food preservation to solar power. We'll have kids' activities. We'll have a brat stand there, as well as an area that we're going to hold over for picnic area. Mm-hmm. Everybody can bring their own food and have picnic area at the same time. And it starts at 9 o'clock and goes until 3. It's at about the same time as the farmer's market is. So you can go to the farmer's market and then move over to the sustainability festival.
But for tomorrow, get over to the plant sale.
Yes, please.
All right. Aaron, thank you so much. Look forward to our next visit.
Thank you.
Aaron LaFave, our guest today. Didn't she do a good job? She's horticulture educator for Extension for Eau Claire County. And we'll have her back and we'll talk with her again. Monday, Paul Hedges comes along with advice for your personal computer. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.